We are continuing chapter 23 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. How could he have dreamed of returning to Privet Drive for Christmas? Sirius's delight at having the house full again, and especially at having Harry back, was infectious. He was no longer their sullen host of the summer. Now he seemed much more determined that everyone should enjoy themselves as much as possible, if not more, than they would have done so at Hogwarts, and he worked tirelessly in the run-up to Christmas Day, cleaning and decorating with their help, so that by the time all went to bed on Christmas Eve, the house was barely recognizable. The tarnished chandeliers were no longer hung with cobwebs, but with garlands of holly and gold and silver streamers. Magical snow glittered in heaps over the threadbare carpets. A great Christmas tree, obtained by Mundungus, and decorated with live fairies. I'm sure they got that legally. And decorated with live fairies, blocked Sirius's family tree from view. And even the stuffed elf heads on the wall wore Father Christmas hats and beards. Harry awoke on Christmas morning to find a stack of presents at the foot of his bed, and Ron already halfway through opening his own, rather larger, pile. "Good haul this year," he informed Harry through a cloud of paper. "Thanks for the broom compass, it's excellent. Beats Hermione's. She's got me a homework planner." Harry sorted through his presents and found one with Hermione's handwriting on it. She, too, had given him a book that resembled a diary, except that it said things like, "Do it today, or later you'll pay," every time he opened a page. Sirius and Lupin had given Harry a set of excellent books entitled Practical Defensive Magic and Its Use Against the Dark Arts, which had superb, moving color illustrations of all of the counter jinxes and hexes it described. Harry flipped through the first volume eagerly. He could see it was going to be highly useful in his plans for the DA. Hagrid had sent a furry brown wallet that had fangs, which were presumably supposed to be an anti-theft device, but unfortunately prevented Harry from putting any money in it without getting his fingers ripped off. Tonks's present was a small working model of a firebolt, which Harry watched fly around the room, wishing he still had his full-size version. Ron had given him an enormous box of every flavor beans. Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, the usual hand-knitted jumper, and some mince pies. What's mince?
Meat.
Oh.
Mince meat.
What kind of meat? Mystery meat?
Yeah.
And Dobby, a truly dreadful painting that Harry suspected had been done by the elf himself. He just turned it upside down to see whether it looked better that way, when, with a loud crack, Fred and George apparated at the foot of his bed. "Merry Christmas," said George. "Don't go downstairs for a bit." "Why not?" said Ron. "Mum's crying again," said Fred heavily. Percy sent back his Christmas jumper. "Without a note," added George. "I know, really? Just keep the damn thing. Hasn't asked how Dad is or visited him or anything." "We tried to comfort her," said Fred, moving around the bed to look at Harry's portrait. "Told her Percy's nothing more than a humongous pile of rat droppings." "It didn't work," said George, helping himself to a chocolate frog. So Lupin took over. "Best let him cheer her up before we go down for breakfast, I reckon." "What's that supposed to be, anyways?" asked Fred, squinting at Dobby's painting. "Looks like a gibbon with two black eyes." "It's Harry," said George, looking at the back of the picture. "Says so on the back." "Good likeness," said Fred, grinning. Harry threw his new homework diary at him. It hit the opposite wall and fell to the floor where it said happily, "If you've dotted the I's and crossed the T's, then you may do whatever you please." Doesn't Hermione know that that's a dumb thing to get? They got up and dressed. They could hear various inhabitants of the house calling Merry Christmas to each other. On their way downstairs, they met Hermione. "Thanks for the book, Harry," she said happily. "I've been wanting that new theory of numerology for ages. And that perfume is really unusual, Ron." "No problem," said Ron. "Who's that for, anyway?" he added, nodding at the neatly wrapped present she was carrying.
"For?"
"What's that?"
"Is that for?"
"What did I say?"
"Yeah, who's that for?"
"Yeah, who's that for?" "Creature," said Hermione brightly. "It had better not be closed," said Ron warningly. "You know what Sirius says. Creature knows too much. We can't set him free." "It isn't closed," said Hermione, although if I had my way, I'd certainly give him something to wear other than that filthy old rag. No, it's a patchwork quilt. I thought it would brighten up his bedroom. What bedroom? Said Harry, dropping his voice to a whisper as they were passing the portrait of Sirius's mother. Well, Sirius says it's not so much a bedroom, more of a den, said Hermione. Apparently he sleeps under the broiler in the cupboard off the kitchen. Mrs. Weasley was the only person in the basement when they arrived there. She was standing at the stove and sounded as though she had a bad head cold when she wished them Merry Christmas, and they all averted their eyes. So this is Creature's bedroom, said Ron, strolling over to a dingy door in the corner opposite the pantry, which Harry had never seen open. Yes, said Hermione, now sounding a little nervous. I think we'd better knock. Ron rapped the door with his knuckles, but there was no reply. He must be sneaking around upstairs, he said, and without further ado, he pulled the door open. Ugh, Harry peered inside. Most of the cupboard was taken up with a very large and old-fashioned broiler, but in the foot space underneath the pipes, Creature had made himself something that looked like a nest. A jumble of assorted rags and smelly old blankets were piled on the floor, and a small dent in the middle of it showed where Creature curled up to sleep every night. Here and there among the material were stale bread crusts and moldy old bits of cheese. In a far corner glinted small objects and coins that Harry guessed Creature had saved, magpie-like, from Sirius's purge of the house, and he had managed to retrieve the silver-framed family photographs that Sirius had thrown away over the summer. Their glass might be a little shattered, but still the little black-and-white people inside them peered haughtily up at them, including, he felt a little jolt in his stomach, the dark, heavy-lidded woman whose trial he had witnessed in Dumbledore's Pensieve, Bellatrix Lestrange. You know, by the way, with the whole black-and-white thing, is it, like, a remarkable coincidence that their photographs turned from black-and-white to color at the same time that ours did, even though the two mechanisms are totally independent? There's no reason that they couldn't have had color photographs for hundreds of years. You know. Anyways, by the looks of it, hers was Creature's favorite photograph. He had placed it to the fore of all the others and had mended the glass clumsily with spellotape. I think I'll just leave his present here, said Hermione, laying the package neatly in the middle of the depression in the rags and blankets and closing the door quietly. He'll find it later. That'll be fine. Come to think of it, said Sirius, emerging from the pantry carrying a large turkey as they closed the cupboard door. Has anyone actually seen Creature lately? I haven't seen them since the night we came back here, said Harry. You were ordering him out of the kitchen. Yeah, said Sirius, frowning. You know, I think that's the last time I saw him, too. He must be hiding upstairs somewhere. He couldn't have left, could he? Said Harry. I mean, when you said out, maybe he thought you meant get out of the house. No, no, house elves can't leave unless they're given clothes. They're tied to the family's house, said Sirius. They can leave the house if they really want to, said Harry. Dobby did. He left the Malfoys to give me warnings 3 years ago. He had to punish himself afterwards, but he still managed it. Sirius looked at slightly disconcerted for a moment and then said, I'll look for him later. I expect I'll find him upstairs crying his eyes out over my mother's old bloomers and something. Of course, he might have crawled in the airing cupboard and died, but I mustn't get my hopes up. Fred, George, and Ron laughed. Hermione, however, looked reproachful. Once they had their Christmas lunch, the Weasleys and Harry and Hermione were planning to pay Mr. Weasley another visit, escorted by Mad-Eye and Lupin. Mundungus turned up in time for Christmas pudding and trifle, having managed to borrow a car for the occasion, as the Underground did not run on Christmas Day. The car, which Harry doubted very much had been taken with the knowledge or consent of its owner, had a similar enlarging spell put on it as the Weasleys' old Ford Anglia. Although normally proportioned outside, 10 people with Mundungus driving were able to fit inside it quite comfortably. Mrs. Weasley hesitated at the point of getting inside. Harry knew that her disapproval of Mundungus was battling with her dislike of traveling without magic. Finally, the cold outside and her children's pleading triumphed, and she settled herself into the back seat between Fred and Bill with good grace. The journey to St. Mungo's was quite quick, as there was very little traffic on the roads. A small trickle of witches and wizards were creeping furtively up the otherwise deserted street to visit the hospital. Harry and the others got out of the car, and Mundungus drove off around the corner to wait for them. They strolled casually toward the window where the dummy in the green nylon stood, and then one by one stepped through the glass. The reception area looked pleasantly festive. The crystal orbs that illuminated St. Mungo's had been turned to red and gold, so they became gigantic. glowing Christmas baubles. Holly hung around every doorway, and shining white Christmas trees covered in magical snow and icicles glittered in every corner, each topped with a gleaming gold star. It was less crowded than the last time they'd been there, although halfway across the room, Harry found himself shunted aside by a witch with a walnut jammed up her left nostril. "Family argument, eh?" smirked the blonde witch behind the desk. "You're the third I've seen today. Spell damage, fourth floor." They found Mr. Weasley propped up in a bed with the remains of his turkey dinner on a tray in his lap, and a rather sheepish expression on his face. "Everything all right, Arthur?" asked Mrs. Weasley, after they had greeted Mr. Weasley and handed their presents. "Fine, fine," said Mr. Weasley, a little too heartily. You haven't seen Healer Smethwick, have you?" "No," said Mrs. Weasley suspiciously. "Why?" "Nothing, nothing," said Mr. Weasley airily, starting to unwrap his pile of gifts. "Well, everyone had a good day. What did you all get for Christmas? Oh, Harry, this is absolutely wonderful." He had just opened Harry's gift of fuse wire and screwdrivers. Mrs. Weasley did not seem entirely satisfied with Mr. Weasley's answer. As her husband leaned over to shake Harry's hand, she peered at the bandaging under his nightshirt. "Arthur," she said with a snap in her voice like a mousetrap, "you've had your bandages changed." "Why have you had your bandages changed today early, Arthur? They told me they wouldn't need to do it until tomorrow." "What?" said Mr. Weasley, looking rather frightened and pulling the bed covers up higher to his, up his chest. "No, no, it's nothing. He seemed to deflate under Mrs. Weasley's piercing gaze. "Well, no, don't get upset, Molly, but Augustus Pye had an idea. He's the trainee healer, you know. Lovely young chap, and very interested in complementary medicine. I mean, some of those old muggle remedies. Well, they're called stitches, Molly, and they work very well on muggle wounds." Mrs. Weasley let out an ominous noise somewhere between a shriek and a snarl. Lupin strolled away from the bed and over to the werewolf, who had no visitors and was looking rather wistfully at the crowd around Mr. Weasley. Bill muttered something about getting himself a cup of tea, and Fred and George leapt up to accompany him, grinning. "Do you mean to tell me," said Mrs. Weasley, her voice growing louder with every word, and apparently unaware that her fellow visitors were scurrying for cover, "that you've been messing about with muggle remedies?" "Not messing about, Molly dear," said Mr. Weasley imploringly. "It was just something Pye and I thought we'd try, only, most unfortunately, well, with these particular kind of wounds, it doesn't seem to work as well as we'd hoped." "Meaning?" Well, I don't know what stitches are, whether you know what stitches are." "It sounds as if you've been trying to sew your skin back together," said Mrs. Weasley with a snort of mirthless laughter. "But even you, Arthur, wouldn't be that stupid." "I fancy a cup of tea, too," said Harry, jumping to his feet. Hermione, Ron, and Ginny almost sprinted to the door with him. As it swung closed behind them, they heard Mrs. Weasley shriek, "What do you mean, that's the general idea?" "Typical dad," said Ginny, shaking her head as they set up off the corridor. "Stitches, I ask you." "Well, you know, they do work well on non-magical wounds," said Hermione fairly. "I suppose something in that snake's venom dissolves them or something. Wonder where the tea room is." "Fifth floor," said Harry, remembering the sign over the welcome witch's desk. They walked along the corridor through a set of double doors and found a rickety staircase lined with several more portraits of brutal-looking healers. As they climbed it, the various healers called out to them, diagnosing odd complaints and suggesting horrible remedies. Ron was seriously affronted when a medieval wizard called out that he clearly had a bad case of spattergroit. "What's that supposed to be?" he asked angrily as the healer pursued him through six more portraits, shoving the occupants out of the way. "'Tis the most grievous affliction of the skin, young master, and that will leave you pockmarked and more gruesome than ever." "Watch who you're calling gruesome," said Todd, his ears turning red. The only remedy is to take the liver of a toad, bind it tight with your throat, stand naked by the full moon, and a barrel of eel's eyes. I have not caught Spattergroit. But the unsightly blemishes upon your visage, young master. They're freckles, said Ron furiously. Now get back in your picture and leave me alone. He rounded on the others, who were all keeping determinedly straight faces. What floor is this? I think it's the fifth, said Hermione. Nah, it's the fourth, said Harry. One more. As he stepped onto the landing, he came to an abrupt halt, staring at the small window set into the double doors that marked the start of the corridor signposted spell damage. A man was peering out at them, all with his nose pressed against the glass. He had wavy blonde hair, bright blue eyes, and a broad, vacant smile that revealed dazzlingly white teeth. Blimey, said Ron, also staring at the man. My goodness, said Hermione suddenly, sounding breathless. Professor Lockhart. Their ex-Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher pushed open the doors and moved toward them, wearing a long lilac dressing gown. Why, hello there, he said. I expect you'd like my autograph, would you? It hasn't changed much, has he? Harry muttered to Ginny, who grinned. How are you, Professor? Said Ron, sounding slightly guilty. It had been Ron's malfunctioning wand that had damaged Professor Lockhart's memory so badly that he had landed here in the first place. Though, as Lockhart had been attempting to permanently wipe Harry and Ron's memories at the time, Harry's sympathy was limited. I'm very well, thank you, said Lockhart exuberantly, pulling a rather battered peacock feather quill from his pocket. Now, how many autographs would you like? I can do joined-up writing now, you know. We don't want any at the moment, thanks, said Ron, raising his eyebrows at Harry, who asked, Professor, should you be wandering around the corridors? Shouldn't you be in a ward? The smile faded from Lockhart's face. For a few moments he gazed intently at Harry, and then he said, Haven't we met? Yeah, we have, said Harry. You used to teach us at Hogwarts, remember? Teach, repeated Lockhart, fairly unsettled. Me? Did I? And then the smile reappeared on his face so suddenly it was rather alarming. Taught you everything I know, everything you know, I expect, did I? Well, how about those autographs, then? Shall we say around a dozen? You can give them to all your little friends, then, and nobody will laugh at that. But then a head poked out of the door at the far end of the corridor, and a voice said, Gilderoy, you naughty boy, where have you wandered off to? A motherly-looking healer wearing a tinsel wreath in her hair came bustling up the corridor, smiling warmly at Harry and the others. Oh, Gilderoy, you've got visitors, how lovely, and on Christmas Day, too. Do you know he never gets visitors, poor lamb? I can't think why, he's such a sweetie, aren't you? We're doing autographs, Gilderoy told the healer with another glittering smile. They want loads of them. They won't take no for an answer. I just hope we've got enough photographs. Listen to him, said the healer, taking Lockhart's arm and beaming fondly at him as though he were a precocious two-year-old. He was rather well known a few years ago. We very much hope that this liking for autographs is a sign that his memory might be coming back a little bit. Will you step this way? He's in a closed ward, you know. He must have slipped out while I was bringing in the Christmas presents. The door is usually kept locked. Not that he's dangerous, but... She lowered her voice to a whisper. Bit of a danger to himself, bless him. Doesn't know who he is, you see. Wanders off and can't remember how to get back. It is so nice to see him. You've come up to see him. Said Ron, gesturing uselessly at the floor above. Actually, we were, But the healer was smiling expectantly at them, and Ron's feeble mutter of going to have a cup of tea trailed away into nothingness. They looked at one another rather hopelessly and followed Lockhart and his healer along the corridor. Let's not stay long, Ron said quietly. The healer pointed her wand at the door of the Janus Thickley ward and muttered, Alohomora. The door swung open and she led the way inside, keeping a firm grasp on Gilderoy's arm until she had settled him into an armchair beside his bed. This is our long-term resident ward, she informed Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Ginny, in a low voice. For permanent spell damage, you know. Of course, with intensive remedial potions and charms and a bit of luck, we can produce some improvements. Gilderoy does seem to be getting back some sense of himself, and we've seen a real improvement in Mr. Bode. He seems to be regaining the power of speech very well, though he isn't speaking in any language we recognize yet. Well, I must finish giving out the Christmas presents. I'll leave you all to chat. Harry looked around. This ward bore an unmistakable signs of being a permanent home to its residents. They had many more personal effects around their bed than in Mr. Weasley's ward. The wall around Gilderoy's headboard, for instance, was papered with pictures of himself, all beaming toothily and waving at the new arrivals. He had autographed many of them to himself in disjointed childish writing. The moment he'd been deposited in his chair by the healer, Gilderoy pulled a fresh stack of photographs toward him, seized a quill, and started signing them all feverishly. "You can put them in envelopes," he said to Ginny, throwing the signed picture onto her lap one by one as he finished them. "I'm not forgotten, you know, no. I still receive a great deal of fan mail. Gladys Gudgeon writes weekly. I just wish I knew why." He paused, looking faintly puzzled, and then beamed again and returned to his signing with a renewed vigor. "I suspect it's simply my good looks." A sallow-skinned, mournful-looking wizard lay in the bed opposite, staring at the ceiling. He was mumbling to himself and seemed quite unaware of anything around him. Two beds along was a woman whose entire head was covered in fur. Harry remembered something similar happening to Hermione during their second year, although fortunately the damage in her case had not been permanent. At the far end of the ward, flowery curtains had been drawn around two beds to give the occupants and their visitors some privacy. "Here you are, Agnes," said the healer brightly to the furry-faced woman, handing her a small pile of Christmas presents. "See, not forgotten, are you? And your son sent an owl to say he's visiting tonight. So that's nice, isn't it?" Agnes gave several loud barks. "And look, Broderick, you've been sent a potted plant and a lovely calendar with a fancy hippogriff for each month. They'll brighten things up, won't they?" said the healer, bustling along to the mumbling man, setting a rather ugly plant with a long swaying tentacle on the bedside cabinet, then fixing the calendar to the wall with her wand. "And, Mrs. Longbottom, are you leaving already?" Harry's head spun around. The curtains had been drawn back from the two beds at the end of the ward, and two visitors were walking back down the aisle between the beds. A formidable-looking old witch wearing a long green dress, a moth-eaten fox fur, and a pointed hat decorated with what was unmistakably a stuffed vulture, and trailing behind with thoroughly depressed... behind her looking thoroughly depressed. Neville. With a sudden rush of understanding, Harry realized who the people in the end beds must be. He cast around wildly for some means of distracting the others, so that Neville could leave the ward unnoticed and unquestioned. But Ron had looked up at the sound of the name Longbottom, too, and before Harry could stop him, he had called Neville. Neville jumped and cowered as though a bullet had narrowly missed him. "It's us, Neville," said Ron brightly, getting to his feet. "Have you seen? Lockhart's here. Who have you been visiting?" "Friends of yours, Neville, dear," said Neville's grandmother graciously, beaming down at them all. Neville looked as though he would rather be anywhere in the world but here. A dull purple flush was creeping up his plump face, and he was not making eye contact with any of them. "Ah, yes," said his grandmother, peering at Harry, and sticking out a shriveled claw-like hand for him to shake. "Yes, yes, I know who you are, of course. Neville speaks most highly of you." "Thanks," said Harry, shaking hands. Neville did not look at him, but stared at his own feet, the color deepening in his face all the while. "And you two are clearly Weasleys," said Mrs. Longbottom, proffering her hand regally to Ron and Ginny in turn. "Yes, I know your parents. Not well, of course, but fine people, fine people. And you must be Hermione Granger?" Hermione looked rather startled that Mrs. Longbottom knew her name, but she shook hands all the same. "Yes, Neville's told me all about you. Helped him out of a few sticky spots, haven't you? He's a good boy," she said, casting a sternly appraising look down her rather bony nose at Neville. "But he hasn't got his father's talent, I'm afraid to say." And she jerked her head in the direction of the two beds at the end of the ward, so that the stuffed vulture on her hat trembled alarmingly. "What?" said Ron, looking amazed. Harry wanted to stamp on Ron's foot, but that sort of thing was much harder to bring off unnoticed when you were wearing jeans rather than robes. "Is that your dad down at the end, Neville?" "What's this?" said Mrs. Longbottom sharply. "Haven't told your friends about your parents, Neville?" Neville took a deep breath, looked up at the ceiling, and shook his head. Harry could not remember ever feeling sorrier for anyone, but he couldn't think of any way of helping Neville out of the situation. "Well, it's nothing to be ashamed of," said Mrs. Longbottom angrily. You should be proud, Neville, proud. They didn't give their health and their sanity so their only son would be ashamed of them, you know. I'm not ashamed, said Neville very faintly, still looking anywhere but at Harry and the others. Ron was now standing on tiptoe to look over the inhabitants of the two beds. We've got a funny way of showing it, said Mrs. Longbottom. My son and his wife, she said, turning haughtily to Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Ginny, were tortured into insanity by you-know-whose followers. Hermione and Ginny both clapped their hands over their mouths. Ron stopped craning his neck to catch a glimpse of Neville's parents and looked mortified. They were aurors, you know, and very well respected within the wizarding community, Mrs. Longbottom went on. Hallie gifted, and the pair of them, yes, Alice, dear, what is it? Neville's mother had come edging down the ward in her nightdress. She no longer had the plump, happy-looking face Harry had seen in Moody's old photograph of the original Order of the Phoenix. Her face was thin and worn now, her eyes seemed overlarge, and her hair, which had turned white, was wispy and dead-looking. She didn't want to seem to want to speak, or perhaps she was not able to, but she made timid motions toward Neville, holding something in her outstretched hand. Again, said Mrs. Longbottom, sounding slightly weary. Very well, Alice, dear, very well. Neville, take it, whatever it is. But Neville had already stretched out his hand, into which his mother dropped an empty Drubal's blowing gum wrapper. Very nice, dear, said Neville's grandmother in a falsely cheery voice, patting his mother on the shoulder. But Neville said quietly, thanks, Mum. His mother tottered away, backing up the ward, humming to herself. Neville looked around at the others, his expression defined, as though daring them to laugh. But Harry didn't think he'd ever found anything less funny in his life. We'd better get back, sighed Mrs. Longbottom, drawing on the long green gloves. Very nice to have met you all, Neville. Neville, put that wrapper in the bin. She must have given you enough of them to paper your bedroom by now. But as they left, Harry was sure that he saw Neville slip the wrapper into his pocket. The door closed behind them. I never knew, said Hermione, who looked tearful. Nor did I, said Ron, rather hoarsely. Nor me, whispered Ginny. They looked at Harry. I did, he said glumly. Dumbledore told me, but I promised I wouldn't mention it. That's what Bellatrix Lestrange got sent to Azkaban for, using the Cruciatus curse on Neville's parents until they lost their minds. Bellatrix Lestrange did that, whispered Hermione, horrified. That woman creature's got a photo of in his den? There was a long silence, broken up by Lockhart's angry voice. Look, I didn't learn joined-up writing for nothing, you know. And that's the end of chapter 23. And next we'll read chapter 24, called Occlumency. I hope you like that, kitty poo. Good night, baby girl. I love you.